by Pearson Harnish, but a huge third down conversion.
You got the game on?
Yep.
On the move down to the 24-yard line of St. Francis.
Who's winning?
He won't say the score.
Laid up and waited for the pass.
Short drop.
Come
out
on,
of the gun.
Who's winning?
Rifles towards the right corner, complete to Vander Cooey, who steps across the plane.
Say the damn score.
You're listening to the original Say the Damn Score podcast, part of the Say the Damn Score podcast network. Here's your host, Logan Anderson.
Welcome to episode 150 of the Say the Damn Score podcast. As the big voice guy just said, my name is Logan Anderson, a freelance sportscaster and owner of Game Time Media in the Twin Cities metro area. This show is all about sportscasting, sharing stories, development tips, and career paths of other sportscasters from around the country and beyond. If you're new to the show, make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. Know that this episode is recorded in the almost world-famous Say the Damn Score studio, a.k.a. my basement office in Burnsville, Minnesota. We've made it through another winter high school sports season on Game Time Media in Minnesota. It's been crazy. We produced a lot of games with a lot of broadcasters, but we got it done, which means I finally have time to drop a couple of new podcast episodes. This will be the first of two. We'll drop another one in about 2 weeks. This one features Travis Justice, a longtime TV, radio, and podcast personality in the Omaha, Nebraska, and Des Moines, Iowa area. This conversation was especially fun for me because I personally grew up watching and listening to Travis when I was a kid, and it turns out we have quite a few weird connections that I didn't necessarily know about before I dove into the research for this show. I do want to mention that before we get into this, there is some mild swearing. There's nothing too bad on it, but if you are listening with kids, just know you might want to wait a little bit longer for it. But anyway, let's get to the conversation. I'm excited to introduce Travis Justice from about 50 different places in the Omaha and Des Moines area. Welcome to the show.
You know, it's interesting. I have the best of both worlds because in 2010, after about 20, 25 years in the television business, where I was a sports director for the CBS affiliate in Omaha, I decided it was time to retire. So I thought I was going to get out of broadcasting altogether. Little did I know that within 8 months, I would get a phone call from iHeartMedia in Des Moines. And I was doing them a favor because before I got off television, they would have me come on the Murph and Andy show, which is on KXNO in Des Moines, which is an all sports station. And I would do Nebraska Husker updates. First of all, I need to clarify, I'm not a Nebraska fan. But since I worked in the Omaha market and I went to college in Des Moines, they had me do their Husker updates. So they had a morning show that had left and they were doing on-air tryouts, right? So if anybody wanted the morning show, they could come try out and do it. I didn't want the morning show. So, but somebody canceled late and they called me and said, "Hey, can you just come up and do this for a day and we'll call it good?" I said, "Yeah, I'll help you out." Well, I did the show and I got a phone call from Joel McRae, who was the president of the market at the time, and said, "Hey, would you want the job?" I said, "I'm not moving to Des Moines because you can't afford me. But if you're up for me doing that at Omaha, I'd do it." So I've been on KXNO radio since 2010, October of 2010. And since then, I was doing it at a KFAB in Omaha. I do everything out of my house now. As you can see, I have a pretty nice studio that I'm able to do. 3 or 4 years after that, Jim Zobel had passed away. He was the longtime voice of the Hawkeyes and hosted the after football game call-in show, which goes for about 3 hours. It's called Sound Off. So I moved into that. And in the meantime, you mentioned you watched me growing up. Dr. Rob Zadiska, who's a former New York Giant, former Nebraska offensive lineman, former Pipeline member, national champion. Him and I had done a lot of television together. We started a Husker podcast, boy, before podcast was even popular. I think we're on our 10th year of podcasting now. So I podcast. I still have a morning radio show. I do the Iowa Hawkeye call-in show. I've done that for 10 years now. And I have a full-time job, which is the director of business development and marketing for a construction company, MCL Construction, in Omaha. So I keep myself fairly busy. How's that?
Do you wear a cape?
That's a long-winded introduction, but I just introduced myself.
Do you wear a cape and fight crime at night, or when do you sleep?
I don't sleep that much. It's interesting. I get about 5 hours a night. So I usually I go to bed about 10, wake up about 3:30, 4 o'clock, and then just start my day. It's you know, it keeps me sane. I'm lucky because I get to do the radio show in the morning, and I'm not kidding. It's my favorite part of the day because I get a laugh and I get to talk sports in the morning, but I get to hang out with one of my best friends who's also my co-host, Ross Peterson. And I get a laugh for 2 hours, and we laugh, we have fun, we talk sports, we talk life, we talk a bunch of things. So, you know, that kickstarts my day, and then we go back into it.
So you were working remotely on radio before it was cool.
Oh, yeah. I've been doing remote since 2010. Now, I would physically go to a radio studio. I did that for 1 year. So since 2011, I've been in my basement, which is really nice. I get to walk downstairs. I do my show naked. And, well, not fully naked, but it's...
You could. No one would know.
Yeah, no one would know except the other guys on the video chat, which we use. But, yeah, I was a remote worker long before remote working was cool. And I started with the, you know, if for the radio nerds that listen to this, I started with an ISDN line in my house. Then I slowly moved to like an internet connection with a box and stuff like that. And now I have a web interface. I just log onto a website every day, hit connect, and I'm connected. So it's all internet based, and it makes my life really, really easy.
So I always do research of the people before I do these shows. And I thought it was interesting that we have a lot of connections that I don't usually kind of find when I'm talking to people on this show. You brought one up before we went on air that you were friends, I believe, in high school with my high school history teacher, who I don't think you would say I was his least favorite student, but I was a little bit of a troublemaker in high school from time to time. But we also both went to small NAIA colleges. You went to Grandview. I went to Morningside in Sioux City. Okay. And I was curious if you ever played against them. It would have been well before my time, obviously. No,
well,
no
I was
offense.
Not a college athlete. So I went to, you know, I'm sure Grandview did, but I went to Grandview to play baseball. I was a halfway decent baseball player in high school. I went to college. I went to Grandview in Des Moines. The only reason I went to Grandview in Des Moines, true story here. So, I'm the last of four boys in the family, and none of my other brothers went to college. So I was the first one to go to college, and I was never going to go to college. I was about ready to enlist in the United States Air Force because at that time, Adrian Cronauer is a big deal, right? Good Morning Vietnam, the movie. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I wanted to do Armed Forces Radio, and I'm like, well, this is going to be my ticket to radio. So I'll just go to the armed forces. I'll be like two of my brothers had done military service. I'm like, I'll just join the military. First, I'm not military material. Okay. Just let's get that out there. Then I met my now wife. We started dating when we were juniors in high school. And I at 18, I'm like, will you marry me? Which was, you know, stupid for 18. She goes, no, I'm not going to marry you. In fact, you need to go to college if you want me to marry you. So she held that little carrot over my head, and she goes, and I go, okay, where are you going to go to school? She goes, well, I'm going to Iowa State, but you can't go to Iowa State. I go, what do you mean I can't go to Iowa State? And she's like, we can't go to the same colleges. We need time away from each other. So I picked the closest college to Iowa State, which was Grandview. And little did I know that Grandview at the time had a spectacular broadcasting department. So that made my choice really, really easy. Went there to play baseball, moved in, and then realized, you know what? I have no interest. I've been playing baseball since I was 4 years old. Didn't want to put in the time, and I just became a full-time student, graduated in 3.5 years, and I had a really good broadcasting career in college where I was hired by a TV station my sophomore year, started producing the Rudy Washington Show for Drake University and KCCI-TV when I was 22 or 20 years old. Eventually became 21 and then got my first TV job in Wausau, Wisconsin, and back to Omaha in 1994. So, but your history teacher was Jerry Green. Now, Jerry and I, we were classmates ever since second grade. So when our two schools, Tri-Center, Neola was the high school that we went to in Iowa. And for our first couple of years, for kindergarten and first grade, their elementary was in Neola. Mine was in Minden. They built a new elementary. And Jerry and I have been, we've been connected since we were in second grade. So we went from second grade all the way up through high school graduation together. So he was a hell of a football player. I know he played at Dana. And then he's been at Fort Calhoun his entire career, and now he's superintendent of schools.
Yeah, he taught me and all of my brothers and sisters at some point, I would assume. But
The next odd connection, it looked like, so was your first job out of college at KNOD Radio in Harlan?
No, that was, I got that job when I was 16 years old.
Oh, okay.
So that was actually my first job, was KNOD in Harlan. So I got my first radio job when I was 16, and I was doing high school play-by-play by the time I graduated high school. So that was my first job. I left KNOD after my freshman summer because I'd moved to Des Moines to work for KCCI. But KNOD was my first job.
But I started, my first radio job was at KDSN in Denison, about 30 miles north of there, and would sit next to Ron Novotny doing games all the time.
God rest his soul, man. Ron Novotny was one of my, was a huge influence on me, and for many reasons, not to drink. When I knew Ron, he was a hell of a drinker, man. He could smoke cigarettes and drink like nobody else. But you know, Ron was a local legend, and Ron really is what local small radio is about. And he had a connection with the community of Harlan. He had a connection with Southwest Iowa. When Ron walked into your gym, it was so cool. It was like a celebrity walked in. And you know, Ron and I never got to connect with Ron much after really the last 20 years or so. We only saw each other sparingly, but Ron had a really big influence on the early part of my life. He taught me how to talk on the radio, you know, because he always had that announcer voice. But man, he died a couple years ago, and he's missed. He's missed by the Harlan community, missed by the Southwest Iowa community, just because He was the local media guy. He had such an impact on so many people.
So how important was it for you to, you know, kind of get reps in high school, calling games and working on the radio, into developing your career into what eventually, you know, it got down the line with that early start?
Well, you know, I mean, it was vitally important. I always knew I wanted to be a journalist. When I first started, I wanted to be a journalist. And so I was always good at finding mentors. So I thought I wanted to be a print journalist, so I befriended Mike Condon. Mike Condon was the beat writer for the Council Bluffs Nonpareil when I was growing up. Now, I'm a lot older than you are, but I was like, oh, man, I want to be a journalist. But I started announcing baseball games when I was 9 years old. So I started doing PA of local peewee games and cub games. That's what it was called back then. And I was doing PA for tournaments when I was 9, 10, 11 years old. And believe it or not, my voice has been this deep, and I've had this voice since I was about 9. And then one day I think it was a high school speech class. I was doing radio and TV news broadcasting, and they're like, you know, you should probably do this. I'm like, okay, whatever. So my mom worked at school, and I said, hey, I'm going to skip the afternoon. I'm going to go up to KNOD and apply for a job, never thinking in the world they would hire a 16-year-old. But I got the motivation actually from Ron, because I played basketball at Tri-Center, and I would talk to him after the games. I said, hey, what do you think about this? He goes, you know what? We hire high school kids to do the weekend all the time. And I'm like, okay. Boy, I did my first read, and I was atrocious. I was brutal, man. I sucked so bad. But they gave me a job. And so on Saturday nights, I would go up, and I would be a DJ from like 2 in the afternoon. And I signed this is back when we turned the radio station off, man. I would shut that transmitter down. I would do all the stuff. I actually had, you don't have to do this anymore. I actually had an FCC license. I remember taking a test and then getting a license and having it stamped by the United States government. They don't even do that stuff anymore. So it was really, really important. And even it was tough at the end because I thought, you know what? God, I got a great job. They're paying me $4 an hour, and I could do this full time because I was doing high school play by play. And I'm like, God, do I go to college? Do I stay at KNOD and become a local celebrity? And I went to college, but when I got to college, I was so far ahead of everybody else coming in. It wasn't even close, right? I mean, so I'm a freshman doing stuff that freshmen didn't get to do, because I had all this working knowledge. What was killing me is that I didn't get to work anymore. I was restricted to a college radio station. And I'm like, man, I had so much more fun on KNOD because I had more responsibilities. But I slowly just kind of slipped into television. How with his face I got into television, I have no idea, but I did. But that all happened because of those early reps at KNOD.
So I never had to do it. How difficult was the FCC test? And do you remember anything that was on it?
Shit, I don't even remember, man. I just remember they gave you this multiple choice question thing. You did a little study guide, and I don't think it was too hard. I think it was open book, but it was a little, yellow card, right? And I remember cutting it out, and I got it laminated and I held it in my pocket for the longest time. It's one of those things I wish I would have held on to, because I don't even know where it's at. It would be great to still have that. Go see. I had an official license, man. I was somebody important. The government trusted me with their airwaves.
Maybe we should go back to that for podcasting.
No. That's what, you know, I mean, it's interesting because, and I dropped an S-bomb earlier. So
it's okay.
So I did, you know, I don't know if you watch Rob and I. That's the, I have a potty mouth. I'll be the first one to tell you that. But I've been lucky enough, I don't think I've ever sworn on the air. But podcasting gives me that free rein to, I don't do it for shock value, but when I have a conversation with somebody and Rob, I can drop an F-bomb, I can drop an S-bomb and not feel bad about it, but it have it in a normal conversation. And some people complain, some people don't, but I, you know, it's one of those things. I love podcasting because it gives you a little bit more freedom to have a little deeper dive of a conversation and make it more real, make it more conversational. Podcasting to me has been, and the word podcast cracks me up because it really is just a radio show without the airwaves, right? I mean, that's what we're doing right now.
Oh,
as my mic falls, is a radio show. That's exactly what we're doing. But I find it more liberating to do it this way. I find it a lot more enjoyable. And yeah, I like not the restrictions that the government puts on me.
Well, maybe you could... I don't know. I was just, my joke was that maybe you'd just get some of the really bad people who went on Anchor for 1 week. If they had to get a license, there'd be less clutter. But
well, that's true. Yeah, it would be, if we threw every bad podcaster out, it would be awesome. Because there's a lot of bad ones out there, man.
So between college, you went to Des Moines for looked like a year and change, then Wausau, Wisconsin for a year and change. What was the break and the process that led you to Omaha?
I got fired, Wausau. So I got fired for doing something everybody's always wanted to do, and I beat up my boss. So I got in a fist fight. You know, I'll never forget this. Matter of fact, they reached out to me. It was 30 years ago this month that the infamous fight in Wausau, Wisconsin, and sports director Keith Blyer, he's a good guy. We were both young. We were both stupid. We both thought we knew more than everybody else. And he was my boss, and he was having a bad day. I was having a bad day. I said, "Why don't we go out in the parking lot and just take care of this?" Well, hell, there was in Wausau, there was like a foot of snow on the ground. All of a sudden, we're rolling around like hockey players trying to take each other's shirts off and beat the crap out of one another. And then the general manager pulls up, watches us, and he fired us right there. but then he goes, "Oh, I don't have a sports department." So he had us work for a month. He's like, it was this old threat. If you work for me for a month, I'll write you a letter of recommendation. If you leave now, you'll never work in Wisconsin again. I don't think I've been back in Wisconsin since then, but I worked because, you know, at the time I thought $12,500 was a lot of money. I got fired, man. And so I was on the beach for a little bit. I was living with my wife's folks. I was working for my father at the time, and sending out jobs. And I got a job in Grand Junction, Colorado. I turned it down because they offered me $10,500 a year. And they told me that the scenery was part of my salary. And I'm like, what? Yeah, the scenery, the mountains of Grand Junction apparently are part of your salary. I wasn't going to move to Colorado for $10,500. Now, this is back in the early 90s. And that wasn't a lot. If you don't think it's a lot of money now, it sure as hell wasn't a lot of money back then either. You know, offered a job in Victoria, Texas, and the news director freaked me out because I was going to go down there. But he did two things. I've always wore glasses on the air. He goes, "Hey, could you not wear glasses?" I go, "Why?" He goes, "Well, my general manager doesn't like glasses." I'm like, "Okay." Well, that was an odd request. But then I said, "Hey, what is rent like in Victoria, Texas?" And I was excited because it's in the San Antonio market or close to the San Antonio market. Also, and I'm like, I can go to Texas, tax-free state, make a little bit of money. And he goes, "I don't know." I go, "What do you mean you don't know what rent is? You own a house?" He goes, "No, I don't own a house." I go, "Well, how do you not know what rent is?" And he goes, "I live in a week-to-week motel." This was the news director. And at that point, I'm like, man, if you're living in a week-to-week motel, there's no way I'm moving to Victoria, Texas. Because if I told my wife we had to live in a Super 8, she'd kick my ass. So I just I bided my time. Sports director job came open at the Fox affiliate in Omaha. And I interviewed and got the job. I started in May. My first assignment was the College World Series. I was 22, 23 years old at the time. And I had no idea what I was doing as a sports director in a pretty good-sized market, right? And then I was there from 1994 till 2001 before I went to the CBS affiliate.
What was the biggest adjustment to learn how to be a sports director in a big market since you said you didn't know what you were doing? What are a couple examples of that?
Just finding out what really made people tick, trying to come within my own as a style. You know, because at the time, you know, SportsCenter was still a big deal. So, you know, do I want to be Dan Patrick? Do I want to be Keith Overman? Do I want to be, you know, somebody else? It took me a while just to figure out who I wanted to be. And at the end, I just had to be myself. I think what really helped me was just, you know, trial and error, understanding what the viewer wanted, trying to be somebody, doing things a little bit different and unconventional. Probably the best thing that ever happened to me actually happened in radio, because I was on KPTM. My first daughter was born. I have four children. They're spectacular kids. And my first daughter was born. And I wasn't making any money. I was making about $23,000, $24,000 at the time. And I needed another job. Well, the assistant general manager at KPTM at the time had just gone to KEZO radio, which was Z92, if you remember Z92. And he hired me to do sports with Todd and Tyler. And I probably learned more with Todd and Tyler on how to be a genuine broadcaster than any other time in my life. I realized you had to be, it's an overused word today, but you had to be vulnerable. You had to tell personal stories about your life. You share everything. You're just honest with people. And so what I learned at Todd and Tyler, I kind of translated into the television, and I had a great career in television, but it also helped me grow as a radio broadcaster. And that's what's kept me going today, is just being open and honest and as real as I possibly can.
Did that fist fight come up in your job interview?
Absolutely. Brad Gonzalez hired me. God rest his soul. He died, man. He had a massive heart attack back in, I'll never forget this, because I was supposed to sign. I'd been working without a contract, which I didn't want a contract at KPTM because they weren't paying me anything. But Brad hired me, and he goes, "Hey, why are you on the beach?" And that's a term for unemployed. And I said, "I got in a fight with my boss." And he goes, "You're hired." Brad had that sense of humor to where he liked that about me. And I think he knew after I told the story, you know, that it happens when you're 22 and 23 years old and you're stupid. So it came up, and he hired me because of it. But I'll tell you another story. This was a dick move by me, but I'm happy I did it because it worked out thanks to Brad dying. I miss him. He's a good man. But I all of a sudden they wanted to sign me to a contract because I was getting pretty good. Okay. So I knew that I had some ability. I could probably start applying for jobs, maybe go to a bigger market or something like that. Well, I didn't want to sign the contract. They're like, "You're not." I go, they raised me to like $33,000. And I'm like, "Man, that's not enough money for 4 years. You're not really building in incentives." Well, Brad ups and dies. He has a heart attack and he dies. And I never signed the contract. And so I waited a couple months. Nobody said anything. I threw the contract away. And in 2001, the CBS affiliate called me and said, "Hey, we want you to be our sports director." And I'm like, "Okay. Let's talk." So we talked and I got a significant raise. And then I walked in the next day. I said, "I quit." And the general manager goes, "You got a contract." I said, "Sorry, man, never signed it. Never signed it. There's no contract." I quit that day. I started the CBS affiliate the very next day. It was a dick move, but it was one that what benefited me and my family, which was nice and helped my career. I probably extended my career in television in Omaha a lot longer, because I don't know how much longer I could have stayed at the Fox affiliate.
Well, you know what? There's plenty of examples of, I don't know, particularly in the Omaha market, but just people in TV getting taken advantage of and signing bad contracts. So turn around once or twice isn't going to hurt anyone.
There's not a good contract in broadcasting. They're all horseshit because they try to take advantage of you. And this is why I like what I do with my podcasting stuff. I own it, right? And it's my property. It's my intellectual property. I'm the one putting the work in for it. I'm the one getting the guest. I'm the one going out and selling it. So these contracts, they want to own your podcast. They want to own your intellectual property. They want to own your social media channels. And I'm like, no way, man. You don't get that from me. That's my brand. It's mine. And I'm sounding a little bit arrogant here, but you know, in today's platform, the business has changed so much. And unfortunately, broadcasting, the reason broadcasting suffers is because it holds on to the old model too much. Holds on to the old model way too much. And it holds people over a barrel with these contracts. The problem is, and you'll know this, there's too many young kids today that they're infatuated with being famous. They don't want to do the hard, you know, they don't want to start in Wausau and work their way up. They don't want to start at Harlan and work their way up. They don't want to start in Denison and work their way up. They want to be a star right away. So somebody offers them a contract. Yeah, I'm going to sign it. Well, they get 2 months, 3 months, 4 months in that contract. They're like, well, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. No, you got to work. You know, there's real work that's got to be done here. Plus, you know, you got ratings you got to get. There's a lot of stuff you have to do. The broadcasters, you know, broadcasters are never going to go away, but I think there's more power being given back to broadcasters, because if you have a decent personal brand, if you have a following, you can create, much like you've done with this podcast. You told me beforehand, you've been doing this about 8 years, on and off. You know what? You do it because you love it, right? But you do it because you also, you own it. It's yours. Nobody can tell you how to do it. And that's what I love about what I do right now. And you're going to go, well, you work for a major media company. I do. But I had enough leverage where I could say, what I do is mine. I'm not in the Des Moines market, so I'm not signing a non-compete for a worldwide thing, right? You can't tell me I can't go do what I do now, because it's me. I have a non-compete in Des Moines. Can't go work anywhere else in Des Moines, but I don't want to work anywhere else in Des Moines. So, you know, I think there's a lot more power coming back to podcasters and radio guys and TV guys.
I don't think it's arrogant at all. I left. I figured out that I was a better employer than employee, because I think I was always very difficult to manage, and I always thought my managers were incompetent and that I could do it better. And sometimes,
those who can't manage, right?
Yes. In some instances, I think I was right. In some instances, I think in hindsight, now that I know a little bit about what's going on the other side, was probably unfair. But I think it's really interesting what you said, because I think that for young kids getting into broadcasting, it's easier now than it's ever been to get reps, but it's harder now, I think, and probably more competitive because of that, to get the really good jobs that you can make a living at without starting your own business.
Yeah, and I'm lucky. I don't need the radio to make a living, right? So I've got a full-time job. I've got a great employer that I work for that allows me to do the radio. So I don't need to make a living off of it. But I forget your question because I went off on a tangent. But it's hard to make a living on this. I know my producer, I'm not going to give his name because I don't want to hold him out. They're only paying him like $15 an hour. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous money for what they're asking him to do, and because he's just graduated from Drake, he's like, oh my god, I'm full time. Yeah, you should have held off for $25 an hour, because to me, I don't think $50,000 is that much money to start somebody at. I mean, I could be wrong, but I try to start my employees that I hire for my job. And I've got a team that I work with. I don't start them less than 50, you know. That's what's bad about this business, is that they still get away with paying pittance to the people who make the money, right? Salespeople go out and make a boatload of money because they make a bunch of sales, but it's they're able to get those sales based off ratings, based off personalities, and it's those people who are making the money. I sound like a unionized guy. I'm not really that way. But I mean, who makes you the money? People who are doing the on-air stuff. If they're not making you money, you're probably going to get rid of them.
What do you think the future is of over-the-air radio? I know some of the companies tried to take the AM band out of cars. I never really heard what happened, but It seems like a matter of when, not if, it becomes irrelevant.
You see, I would disagree with you. I think good over the air radio will still exist. I think my morning show with Ross Peterson's a very good example of that. Our cume is almost 2.5 hours, and our ratings we're number one 25-54 with men in the entire city of Des Moines in a morning drive time slot. That's hard to do. Here's the deal. If you're entertaining, if you're vulnerable, if you give people a reason to listen, they'll listen. They'll find you on a podcast. They'll find you over the radio. Corporate radio blows, right? I mean, when you go to one city and you're in another city, you're like, well, the voice guy's the same. The call letters are almost the same. It's KISS. It's Star. That to me is not good. I think good local talk radio with good host will be around if it's entertaining, if it's engaging, and it draws people in. You're only as good as the product. So I think I love over-the-air radio. Trust me, I've had plenty of opportunities to go join podcast networks. And I'm like, I don't want to do that because you're starting over from scratch. You have to build an audience. That takes time. Over-the-air radio, people still listen to it, whether that be on the app, whether it be over the air, or even on a podcast form, there's still something to be said for it. But it can't be boring. It can't be, canned like you hear a lot of top 40 stations. It's got to be authentic. It's got to be local. It's got to be local. Listen, I appreciate Dan Patrick, Jim Rome, Colin Coward. They're good syndicated, not good. They're great syndicated shows. But if you want a local audience, you have local talent. KXNO in Des Moines has four local shows. Think about that. Four local shows. Me in the Morning, they've got Miller and Condon, they got Murph and Andy, and then they got The Drive. I mean, not too many local stations will devote that much time to local shows, but guess what? It performs because it's local, and people can make that connection with local hosts.
And it looks like, I don't know if it was because of the COVID pandemic or what the situation was, but in 2020, it looked like they briefly let everyone go and then
January 14th, man,
had a change of heart, brought everybody back.
I'll never forget this shit. It was amazing. I got done with the show. It was 5 minutes after the show. I log on to the Twitter account, and all of a sudden, everything just starts disappearing. And I'm like, oh, Twitter's got a glitch. And I'm like, what? My entire history just disappeared. I'm like, what the hell just happened? I get a phone call from Sean Roberts, who was our producer at the time. He goes, dude, they just fired me. I'm like, what? They didn't let me know they were going to fire you. Then Heather Burnside called me, and she goes, they just fired me. I go, what are you talking about? Nobody ran this by me. They were going to. Then all of a sudden, the phone rang, and it was Joel McRae, the market president, and he like, hey, you got a sec? I said, are you going to fire me? He goes, yeah, we're making some cutbacks, corporate cutbacks. So we were fired for 2 days, and then this is the power of radio. This is the power of getting an audience. The advertising community said, not only are we going to pull our money from KXNO, we're going to pull our money from iHeart altogether. They basically said, this was wrong. You have a local team. You fired them all. We are pulling our money. And it didn't hurt that the one local show, Murph and Andy, thank God for them too, because Keith Murphy is the sports director at WHO-TV, and Andy Fales is he's a morning anchor now doing afternoons and evenings. They refused to go back on the air. They just kept kind of holding, hey, we may quit. So they would have lost everybody. And 2 days later, they called us and asked us all to come back. And there was some trepidation by some people. I was like, it's not that I didn't care. I had a job. You know, I felt sorry for the guys and Heather, who that was their full-time job, right? They were like, they were blindsided because their full-time jobs were taken away from them. And they were like, holy crap, what am I going to do? I was lucky enough. I had a full-time job. I'm like, well, I lost some spending money because it's a part-time gig. I do 2 hours a day and I go to work. So I was in a better place than most. So when they called me back, I'm like, sure, I'll come back. It took some convincing by other people, but it's worked out. Everybody came back, and we were able to. We've been going strong for another 3 years since then, man. But it was an interesting day.
Is it difficult to do the prep for that show when you're not in the market locally?
No, you know, not at all. And I think the reason why, listen, I'm going to be full disclosure. We're probably, you know, 50% sports, depending on the time of year. Football, college basketball, we're 75% sports. Summertime, it's 50 to 40% sports, a lot of life stuff. So I can go back and forth. But I think what gives me an advantage is that I lived in Des Moines for 4 years. I worked in the media market. I was at KCCI-TV for a number of years. So knowing Des Moines the way I do, I can make local references. I can talk about experiences. I can reference that. I'm good friends with John Walters, who he's actually at my wedding. He's the voice of the Iowa State Cyclones. So I have that connection to him. I'm friends with the AD, Jamie Pollard at Iowa State, good friends with Bill Finley, the basketball coach. So I have connections there. So prepping is not that hard. And once you get into movie, I've been doing it 10 years. Hell, what difference is my prep if I get up and read the Des Moines Register every day? I don't need to be at the games. I can, you know, I've got the Iowa game on behind me right now, so I'm able to watch the game and formulate my own opinions. I'm not big on interviews. And here's why. I do an opinion show. And I stopped having local writers on and beat writers because they never gave an opinion, right? They would just come on, they would tell you, but they wouldn't go all the way in. I'm like, well, I don't care what you wrote about. I want to know how you feel. Well, I can't say that. Well, if you can't say it, I don't want you on the air. Not that I don't like you. I like them all a lot, but I want an engaging show where we have strong opinions. I don't do a news show. I do a talk show and I do an opinionated show. So I'm like, if you're not going to give an opinion, I'm not gonna have time. Now, if a big story breaks, that's a different story because you want to kind of find out what's going on. I have coaches on every once in a while to promote a game. I have a really good relationship with Mark Farley, the head coach at Northern Iowa. He's spectacular because he's real, he's honest, he gives honest answers. But we don't do a lot of interviews just because there's no authenticity there, or people just hold back because that's their job. They're a journalist. They're not allowed to have an opinion. So it's basically two guys talking for 2 hours. So that's pretty easy to prep for. I can formulate an opinion by watching a game. That's not a hard thing for me.
Speaking of formulating opinions, you were on the 590 sports station in Omaha doing a talk show for a long time. Man. And you, again, I told you I grew up watching and listening to you. So I remember that. I think you were with Matt Peralt. And you guys were kind of known as being the people who didn't kiss the Husker ring the way that everybody else did. Was that a conscious decision, or just because? Do you think it would have been the same if you were the rights holder?
Here's the deal: is that I didn't kiss the Husker ring. I mentioned I'm not a Husker fan. However, I have a Husker podcast where I have former players that were playing when I was covering there coming to my studio all the time. They don't. That means they like me, right? You wouldn't come to my home, sit down with me. I wouldn't host a show with a former Husker if they didn't like me. Did I kiss their ass? No. But was I fair and honest in the opinions that I gave? I thought I was. If something's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad. When they fired Frank Solich, that was a bad deal. That was a really, really bad deal. Bill Callahan and Steve Peterson came in. You could see the bad things that were happening. It was divided an entire fan base. Bo Pelini came in. They united again. Tom Osborne was running the show. Then Harvey Perlman, the chancellor at Nebraska, the arrogant ass that he is, hired somebody else to replace Tom. They fired Bo, and it became splintered again. I can look at something and go, that's good, that's bad, and have an opinion about it. Listen, Beth Getz did the right thing at firing Brian Ferentz. Kirk Ferentz didn't like it, especially when they did it in October, but it was the right thing to do because Iowa's offense is bad. It was underperforming, and it just was not moving the needle. When you have the worst-ranked offense in the country, change needs to be made. And I did that on the Hawkeye show. And I think that's why I've been able to keep that job for 10 years is that I don't go on there and just bow to the Hawkeyes because I host the postgame show for 3 hours. You sit there and go, I talk like a fan. I grew up an Iowa fan. So I'm from Iowa, so I grew up an Iowa fan. Not that I hated Nebraska. I wasn't emotionally attached to them. So when you're not emotionally attached to somebody, it's easier to have an honest opinion about it.
I think that's interesting. Didn't you start the sound off show right after Frank Solich got fired? What was it like?
No, it was crazy because Tommy Frazier was hosting the show with me at the time. I started sound off the year Frank got fired. So it was Frank's last year. And that really helped sound off. So that was a live call-in show on television. And to full disclosure, I stole the name, right? Sound off is the name of the show that I host on WHO radio now. And actually WHO TV has a show called Sound Off. I'm like, you know, imitation is the best form of flattery. I just took the concept and the name and put it in Omaha. But we took live, on-air calls. Tommy was working for the university at the time. They made him quit. They're like, you can't work with this guy. And so that's where Dr. Rob came on. That would have been 2004. And Dr. Rob and I did that show for another 6 years. And then we started podcasting. So yeah, I was doing Sound Off when that all happened. And that's where a lot of Husker fans hated me because I was really anti-fire Frank. And I wouldn't hop on board with the Bill Callahan hire because I didn't like the way it went down. And in the end, I'm not right that often. I was right about that one. I was dead.
History
on.
Will say you were right on that
yes.
one. What was the weirdest or craziest call you got? Either on that or just in a call-in coaches show, but just to the post-game call-in type of show. That's where a lot of the real loony bin people come out. What is the weirdest call?
Well, there's a number. I can give you the weirdest coach interview that I ever did, and I'll give you one of the weirdest calls that we ever had, and that was on Sound Off. I'll start with the coach. This was when I was back on Big Sports 590, and we were interviewing Greg Marshall from Wichita State. And that dude, there's a reason he got fired, right? He was just a different cat, and he had a temper. Well, he's doing this interview with us, and he's got us on speakerphone. So he's talking on speakerphone, which is just rude, and he's eating an apple, right? I'm like, Coach, are you eating? Yeah, I'm eating an apple. I go, well, you have us on speakerphone. You're chomping on your food. I don't want to have this conversation anymore. I go, this is over. I hung up on him, right? So we have the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs on, Mitch Holthus, a couple days later, and he's also the voice of the Valley, and I tell him the story. Well, he said some things about Greg Marshall, who that was his first year in the Valley, and Mitch went to Wichita State, and Greg gave him the riot act because he got back to him. And Mitch, I felt bad because Mitch is one of the greatest human beings in the world. And it got back to Greg what we did and what Mitch had said. And then Greg Marshall's wife is batshit crazy, right? And she chased me out of the CenturyLink Center in Omaha because I was doing play-by-play on television for Creighton basketball. And every time we play Wichita State, I was always looking over my shoulder. She yelled at me at down in the Savas Center. I think it's the Enterprise Center in St. Louis at the Valley Tournament. That was just really bizarre. After I hung up on her husband, I think she was mad about it. The weirdest call I ever got on Sound Off, which I do on WHO radio after the Iowa games, it was a late game. And we took a call, and the guy's snoring, man. He'd been waiting on hold for like an hour. And he's drunk. He'd been snoring. So I said, hey, put him on hold. And so we kept going back to him, and we just kept him on hold for another hour. And we'd go back. And I'm like, this dude, and everybody thought it was fake. And the dude was generally just passed out with the phone, like on his chin. And he just kept snoring. I mean, it's not really a crazy call, but it was one of those crazy things. You remember, like, a dude literally fell asleep trying to call a radio call-in show. It was fun.
So we've touched on this earlier, but I want to dive a little deeper into it. We mentioned that you left the full-time broadcasting industry. Yep. How difficult was that for you? I think it was 2010-ish. Was that a hard decision? And kind of what was the process to making it?
I can tell you, it was an interesting process, but it was the time I got out at the right time because the business was changing. And I'll never forget this. I was doing the Creighton George Mason game. I was in Washington, D.C. George Mason is in Virginia. So I flew out there to do the Creighton George Mason game. My wife actually came with me. I go, you know what? I'm going to Washington, D.C., doing a game. Why don't you go see the sights in D.C.? You've always wanted to see it. I'm going to do the game. We'll fly home. Well, I'm a Heisman Trophy voter at the time. And so that would have been Ndamukong Suh's senior year. And Ndamukong Suh finished second in the Heisman voting. Now, for a defensive guy, that's a big deal. That's a really, really big deal. And I never forget that I called my news director. I said, listen, I said, Sue may win this thing. We're out here. I found a $100 flight to New York. I said, it's going to cost you $100. We'll get a hotel for like $250. And then we'll get on a flight. We'll come home. And it's going to cost you like $550 altogether, right? And my wife went with me. I was going to pay for her out of my pocket. I wouldn't ask them to pay. So $550 to go up to New York, cover the Heisman Trophy presentation, which we covered in 2001 when Eric Crouch won. And Rob, I forget Rob's last name, but his first name was Rob. And I'll never forget this. He goes, it's not in the budget. I said, it's $550. And if Ndamukong Suh wins and we're out here, we're going to have the biggest exclusive anybody's going to have. The only other media out here is going to be the Omaha World Herald. ABC affiliate didn't come out. Fox affiliate didn't come out. NBC affiliate didn't come out. We're out here. It's $550. Get on the plane and come home, he said. Now, I'll never forget that where I work now had been pursuing me for about 6 months. And I said, I looked at my wife. I said, if they can't cover a story for $550, then I don't want to do this anymore. If you can't literally cover the news of the day and tell the stories, it's just not worth doing anymore. So it was a very it took me about 6 months to get to that point. But once you learned you really don't matter, they don't really care about covering the news and the stories that impact the state, that impact the fan base, I wanted no part of it anymore. So it was an easy decision to make on the plane ride home.
What was the process in deciding what you did next then?
I had a job waiting for me. So, you know, the job was the director of business development for MCL Construction. I had that job. It had been waiting there for me for 6 months. Bob Carlisle, the owner of MCL, kept calling, and he's a good friend of mine. He's like, just come to work for me. I've got this job for you. And I was like, no, we're too good of friends. I didn't want to work for my friend. And at that point, I'm like, I know the job's there. I know it's going to pay more than I'm making now. My oldest daughter was going into high school at the time. I was traveling all the time. Think about this. From 1994 until 2010, I can count on one hand how many games I missed home and away. I mean, that's a lot of college football games, right? So I'm doing college football. I'm on the road every weekend. I'm doing a Sunday night show. I'm doing Todd and Tyler in the mornings. Then when basketball hits, I'm doing Creighton basketball. And we did 13, 14 games a year on television. I traveled all the time. And I just knew, it was the right thing to do for my family, for the stability of my family. And it was having a job there. I didn't have to go look for a job. I didn't even apply for the job. They're like, just come work for us. So as soon as I left television, I started the next day at a construction company. I thought I was done. I thought, yeah, I'm out. But it's like the scene in The Godfather 3. Just as soon as you think that you're out, they pull you back in, which is actually a blessing. And I think my boss, Bob, knew that because he's like, I asked him about 5 years later, 6 years later, I go, you know, why do you let me do this? And he goes, because you would probably have left pretty quickly if I didn't. And he's right. I missed it to a point to where I probably would have been sucked back in. But now that I get to do it for 2 hours a day, I get to do the Hawkeye radio show, the call-in show, and I get to do my podcasting. It fulfills my need of creativity. So I don't have that urge to get back into it full time. I have the best of both worlds. I have stability. I have a great company I work for with a great culture. And I also have the broadcasting that I can do part time and the podcasting I can do on my own time.
We've alluded to your podcast with Rob Zadiska, Husker yeah. Doc Talk. And I just wanted to give you credit because you figured out a way to not only do a podcast, but to have people send you beer to drink to talk about on the podcast.
Well,
so
see, that's what's funny is that it's a pretty popular podcast, right? It kind of blows my mind away how popular it is. And when we first started doing it, we're like, what do we want to do different? I'm like, let's just drink while we do this thing. And all of a sudden, we started drinking different craft beers. We were sponsored by a local craft brewery for a little bit. But we started drinking, and people were like, what are you drinking? So we talk, tell them what we're drinking. And one day, about 4 or 5 years ago, I'm like, hey, if you want us to drink beer you like, send us beer. Lo and behold, man, I get people send me beer all the time. Now, I don't have them send it to my house because I don't want to give them my house address. So I have them deliver it to work. Well, you'd think that MCL Construction is a beer distributorship sometimes. But there's so much beer coming in that I'm like, they're like, hey, you got another shipment, got another shipment. You're going to share some of that? No, I'm not going to share it. I'm taking it home. And then, yeah, so it is probably it's a beer and football podcast. It's two guys talking around, talking football, drinking beer, and just having a good time. So I don't know. It's just weird how people send us beer. And I got another shipment coming up from Georgia. I got a guy in Arkansas that brings me beer all the time. It's just fun to develop those relationships with your listeners. And when you talk about them and they talk about their beer on the air, they love it. They absolutely love it.
Has anybody ever sent you beer you didn't like?
Oh, there's a lot of beer I don't like. And I'll say I don't like it. I'll be like, man, this is just too bitter. This is just not for me. I have no problem giving an honest assessment of a beer because it's just one of those things where I can't like everything. And so they're like, hey, try this. Okay, I'll try it. Oh, that sucked. And I'll say that sucked. Rob would be like, this is awesome. Rob's got a different palate than me. I have no problem saying I don't like your beer. Now, but they usually give us a nice assortment. Well, I'll go, well, I like this one. I just don't like the stout you just gave me. You know, the peanut butter double chocolate almond stout. Yeah, that probably just what didn't fit my taste buds.
A lot of people now are trying to build podcasts. That's kind of the new thing, so to speak. What advice would you give to someone trying to grow an audience on a podcast?
Be yourself. Just be yourself. If you want to get an example of what I do, and I'm not saying I do it the right way, but you can watch us on our YouTube channel. Just search Doc Talk Sports. Just be yourself. You don't have to follow any rules. There are no rules to follow. I guess my number one thing, I'm an audio snob. Just use good audio, right? Get a good microphone. Get something good to record it in and make sure it sounds good. If it doesn't sound very good, nobody's going to listen to it. And so I know some people have a microphone 2 feet away from them. Like, yeah, you can have the best microphone in the world. If it's 2 feet away from you, it's still going to sound hollow. Look, at you got a headset on with a microphone, and it fits the purpose. My microphone is literally 2 inches from my mouth right now, and it just sounds better. I've invested a lot of money into good quality sound, and I've invested a lot of money into a production studio that sounds good. You can start small, but just make sure it sounds good and just be yourself. And I will say this, producing content sounds easy. Producing content is one of the hardest things to do on a regular basis. So if you're going to do a podcast, you better say, okay, I'm committed to it. Because if you do 10 podcasts and go, well, nobody's listening. Well, because you only have 10 episodes out, right? I mean, we didn't grow. Rob and I only did it during the season for maybe the first 6 years we were doing it. We had a pretty decent audience. But once we started doing year-round, during the off-season, we went to an interview format. It's just, it took really 7-8 years to even grow the damn thing. And you're probably like, oh my God, I don't have 8 years. Well, don't go into this thing you're going to podcast full time because it's not going to pay any money. I make a little bit of money off the podcast because I'm able to sell sponsorships now. I've got some good partners that like to listen to it. YouTube channel makes a little bit of money, but you're not going to get rich doing that. Joe Rogan and those guys get rich because they have a gazillion listeners. The average podcaster is using their podcast. This is the way you should use your podcast, is to as a lead generator, right? You might make, I don't know, $20, $30 a month off your podcast, but you need to be selling something else in that podcast of your service. So let's use you, for example. You help high schools out and stuff like that. So you would use this to, you know, engage with people who may want to hire you for your services and your expertise. That's where you're going to make your money. If you're going to go into podcasting, I'm going to be the next Joe Rogan. Well, good luck with that because the odds are against you. Not saying it's not going to happen. The odds are against you. I do this podcast because, first of all, it's fun to me. As soon as it stops being fun, I'm not going to do it anymore. Second of all, I do it because I make a little bit of money off of it. but I do it most of all because it's fun and I have fun doing it. So that's what my advice would be. Have fun, be yourself, and make sure to have good audio.
The other
answer, but I hope that makes sense.
The other podcast that I found out that you do is one about traveling to Italy. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that and how that came around.
Well, that started, I went to in 2009, I was in a bad place, man, and I needed to get away. And it was, my family, and we went over to Italy for 17 days, and I fell in love with Tuscany. It's an easy place to fall in love with. And I went back 2 years later, and I'm like, God, I love this. It's a place where I can get off the grid. I can just kind of decompress and not have to worry about anything. Then I'm like, you know what? What if I started just telling stories of the people I meet in Tuscany, the experiences that I have, and start promoting their businesses and have kind of a working relationship? So that really is nothing but a hobby to me. We don't do a lot of episodes. I think we're on 93 episodes now in the last 10 years or so. So we get, you know, 10 episodes a year in on a good year. We've done three already this year. But I just started saying, you know what? I want to use this to talk to people, to find out what I can do every time I go over there and build a relationship. That's all I do. And share that with other people. It literally is a hobby. I go every year now. I go every December. I go for 2 weeks in December, and the people I podcast with, I go and meet. And a little selfish here, I turn around and I get to experience their service, right? And I don't have to pay for it. So it's I pay to get over there, but once I get over there, I save myself some money. They're like, hey, you want to go on a wine tasting? My treat today because you did this. The fun part is that I'm kind of a middleman now that I can help people arrange their trips and they go through me and I connect them with the right people. And every time I'm over there, and I was just over there in December, I'm going back in March, and they're like, Travis, you would not believe how many people listen to this podcast. People hop in our cars on a private tour. They're like, hey, we heard you on the Total Tuscany podcast. And that's fun for me because I know they're getting value out of it, right? They're like, they're probably wondering who the hell they're going to talk to. We do this thing. People, before they travel, find that podcast, they listen to it, and then they're able to say, hey, I heard you on the podcast. And that's fulfilling to me. It literally is a hobby. Since I have all this equipment, I'm like, I might as well put it to good use.
We went there and spent about a week on our month-long trip to Europe in Tuscany. Oh, nice. We loved Florence.
Yeah, Florence is my favorite city. So I now have, I don't own the apartment, but I have an apartment that I will rent every time in Piazza San Marcos, and it's great. I've got it down to a science. So in Florence has changed even so much in the last 10 years in the fact that I can get off the train, I can get off the plane in Florence. There's now a train that takes me right downtown. It costs me €2.50. You're downtown in like 20 minutes. And Florence is, to me, the most spectacular city in the world. It's the home of the Renaissance, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, Dante. There's so much that happened in Florence. And the weird part about this is that my first time to Florence in 2009, I hated it. We showed up in Florence on Palm Sunday, and I was not prepared for a crowd like that. I mean, if you think New York City's packed, if you think LA's packed, Florence is not a big city. It's the size of Council Bluffs. It's just not very big. But there was so many people there. I'm like, this sucks. It was hot. It smelled. I'm like, I don't get it. Then I went back another time, and I'm like, oh, this is when nobody was there. And I'm like, oh, this is what the city's about. And I fell in love with the city. And one would say, hey, you need to broaden your horizons. You know, do Germany, do Spain, do London. I'm one of these guys, you know what? I'm happy in Florence. I find my peace in Florence, and so I just keep going back to Florence all the time.
One of our recurring bits, I ask everybody on this show before we close things out for a broadcast horror story. Obviously, nothing actually horrific, but something really strange, weird broadcast location. We've had people get attacked by bugs in the middle of a game. You name it, it could be anything.
Here's the deal. I am doing play-by-play of a high school softball game. I was working at KNOD at the time. That's KNOD in Harlan. And they don't give me the good broadcast equipment because Ron Novotny's had another game, and he did like the 6 o'clock game. I did the 8 o'clock game. I'm on top of a dugout, in Underwood, Iowa, calling the Underwood Shelby Tennant softball game. I have to do it over the phone. So at that time, there aren't cell phones in 1988. Okay, so they have to plug me in on literally plug the line in on the telephone pole. I'm sitting there on the telephone doing the game, not with a headset like you have. I'm literally using a telephone. The pitcher for Shelby Tennant at the time, her name is Kaylee Hunt. I'll just let you know the name Hunt didn't come out of my mouth. I'll let you know what that rhymes with, but that was a horror story. And I'll never forget going to break. And the producer back there goes, "You know what you just said?" "Yeah, I know what I said. It came out of my mouth. You're right. But it was, I Hunt did not come out of my mouth. It was a different word that is a taboo word, should we say, in language today. It probably always has been. So that's my horror story.
What's the weirdest broadcast location? Because I went to a lot of the places where you went, and I know a lot of them were, I don't know, the back of pickup trucks or scissor lifts. Yeah. Or,
you know, unfortunately, my time of doing broadcasting in that type of atmosphere was only when I was 16, 17, 18 years old. So my time was limited because I was in television pretty much after that. I would say on top of that time on top of a dugout, it was just really, here I am on top of a dugout. And today, hell, you need nets because you're probably going to get hit. But, you know, I don't have that many stories of unique locations, except when I was working at KNOD, and I would say it was on top of a dugout, just sitting there. And, you know, it's these old tin things. You're trying, you can't put a table down. You sure as hell can't put a chair down. You're just either sitting on your butt and you're just sitting on top of a dugout because that's the closest place the phone line was.
What about sportscasting brings you joy?
Everything. Absolutely everything. But more than anything, connecting with people. I know this, and this is hard for sportscasters, even broadcasters, to understand. Listen, nobody's ever going to remember the X's and O's story. Nobody's ever going to remember how you broke down a game. They're going to remember something you said about your life, something that happened in real world, and making a connection. I love people. It sounds weird because my wife would tell you that I hate people, and it's not the truth. I love connecting with people and being able to tell stories and give them something to remember. I just love making that connection with listeners and viewers and go, you know what? I remember that story you told about your daughter. I remember that story you told about, you know, a coach and the interaction you had. That's real life. Connections are real life. Sports are just games. Hell, I can't tell you who won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. But I can tell you a lot of the things that happened when I was on the road with the people I met. And when I'm able to tell those stories and people go, man, that was a great story. And let me tell you about a story that I have. And that's the connection I like. So it's not just sports broadcasting. It's broadcasting in general where you're able to connect a genuine connection with the people that listen to you or watch you.
Who are your favorite broadcasters to watch and listen or listen to on both a national and a local level where you are?
You know, John Walters on a local level, it's because I was his intern and I watched him when he was the play-by-play voice of Drake. And then when he got the Iowa State job, he's been a mentor of mine and he's just absolutely spectacular. I'm going to tell you somebody who's dead now. But you know, I was a huge Howard Cosell fan because he was just non-conventional. He wasn't a sports guy by nature. He did it differently. He did it with an opinion. I like people with an edge who don't follow the rule book. I think a lot of guys are pretty vanilla now. But I like guys that just have a little bit of an edge to them. Kevin Harlan's awesome. Kevin Harlan is one of my favorite. That's alive and still working today. Does a lot of Westwood One. Does some TV games on CBS and I don't know if it's CBS or Fox, but I would say Kevin Harlan is probably my favorite national guy right now, and then John Walters is my favorite local guy.
All right. If anybody wanted to reach out to you, what would the best way to do so be?
That's good. That's a good question. DocTalkSports@gmail.com. That's DocTalkSports@gmail.com, or you can also just leave us a comment on our YouTube channel. You can find it, just search Doc Talk or Husker Doc Talk, and you'll be able to find it right there. So we're pretty easy to locate there.
Once again, we're chatting with Travis Justice. He is a sports personality in Omaha.
I'm a nobody.
Not true. Sports personality in Omaha, and thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks, man. And say the damn score, would you?
This has been the Say the Damn Score podcast. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you prefer by clicking the big red subscribe button at the top of SayTheDamnScore.com. You can follow us on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it these days by looking up Radio_Logan. And we always love honest feedback, including Apple Podcast reviews, which help make the show better and maybe boost my ego a little bit. As always, I say that is a great purpose. So leave me a review. Make me feel better. Last but not least, please reach out to our guests. Follow them on social media and let them know you appreciate their appearance on the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Logan Anderson. And the next time you're on the air, make sure to say the damn score a little bit more.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Say the Damn Score podcast. My name is Matt Kundle, and if you enjoyed Logan's show, you might like my show, the Sound Off Podcast. It's the podcast about broadcast, and we interview people behind the microphones in radio, television, and voiceover, as well as the newer forms of media like podcasting and video streaming. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and at soundoffpodcast.com.